are entering the Giant Rock Podcast. Kick back and enter a world that few know about, and even fewer understand.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation.
Hey, Giant Rock Podcast, March, spring equinox, hey. Anyways, Baba and I are going to talk about Elon Musk and his colonization of Mars. That's like kind of like an offshoot conversation, but anyways, I just think that we can fix Earth more than we can fix Mars at the moment. Let them move there. That's what I think. Anyways, what do you think, Baba?
Well, I recently saw someone protesting in a third world country, and they were holding up a sign. Why, instead of spending that money and going to Mars, spend it on fixing Earth. And it puts a very important question, is that these billionaires, well, specifically Elon Musk, are talking about investing all this money in another a planet that's a desert, basically, and building. How is that going to work out when the billionaires could still be very filthy rich and invest all kind of money in ending poverty? It was estimated that a $500 billion a year would end global poverty and infrastructure and healthcare and Planned Parenthoods in Africa. I mean, that would end war, that would end terrorism, that would end all of it. It would probably end even countries. It would end it all. I think that could, but we have to ask ourselves, because why is that not being done? And it goes down to, I think we haven't resolved something in the human psyche. And collectively, like Carl Jung said, the collective unconscious, there's something has not been resolved with their sense of separation from each other and the planet that produces these kind of mutant characters like Elon Musk that are like so egotistical that it's off the charts that they're willing to talk about going to Mars and they won't even give their workers the right to not work during COVID. You know,
it's creating real estate elsewhere. I think, you know, they're going after real estate. Because, like, these billionaires own 20% of the planet so far. And that's land. They're buying up farmlands, too. They own up to 4 or 5% of the farmlands now. That's all corporate farmlands. And these genetic foods that are being produced in mass quantities are going to genetically change us eventually with our... Anyways, but that's down the road. But, you know, like, we, you know, it's affecting the soil and everything. And then they should focus on that and helping out the small guy, working from the bottom up, not the top to the bottom. Nothing's going to trickle down but crumbs. Why, they got pounds and pounds of food, and the few crumbs that fall your way, that's trickle down. That hasn't worked at all for 40, 50 years now. I think it's time to change all that and flip it to the other side. And going to Mars, yeah, great. You go there and live there. That, like I said, we, you know, like, I'm going to focus where I'm at. And it's just like I've seen movies where the future's dim, and, you know, and they're fighting for Earth, you know, getting air, just air alone, you know, and they let Earth die. But, you know, like, it's like overpopulation, and the overpopulation has created a disposable society. And there's like recycling's just started, really. I mean, we're not really on a full-fledged recycling way. We should take every product. We throw away things. I throw it away. Well, where does that go? Where does throw away go? It goes all back into the earth. It has nowhere else to go but back into the earth. And eventually it'll turn back to earth. I mean, humans will come and go. You know, we're just a little time and space of this planet, and should make the best of it and leave our mark, I guess, like the dinosaurs did.
Well, you know, I mean, Elon Musk recently tweeted, I saw on a socialist website, that he thought the stimulus was a terrible idea for the American for the people. Now, what people did he mean? Did he mean people in general? Probably not. Because he's not saying he wants the government subsidies. His companies get billions of dollars. That's corporate welfare. He's not a regular person struggling can't get help. I mean, that shows his mentality that he even argues against providing a basic stimulus check. Not even UBI, not even universal health care, but just a one-time stimulus check he's arguing. So put yourself in his shoes. Here's a guy that's born out of a rich woman's cooch. He's already in wealth. He's brought up in these boarding schools or whatever. He's like brought up with this mentality already. And then that's not enough for him. He's got to go become a billionaire. So by the time he gets to the billions of dollars, he's reached what I feel is a level of sociopath psychosis that is off the charts. Off the charts. But yet, because we live in capitalism where the religion is money, where billionaires are the sense, he's worshipped. You see all these posts on social media about how you could be like Elon Musk, about how he's a genius. Meanwhile, in reality, he's a sociopath, you know?
And just because he has money and then he's famous because of his money, that's what the billionaires and millionaires want to be famous. Like, it's not enough just to have money and that power. They want to be famous and everybody love him and admire him. Look what Trump thought he was. Everybody made out like, well, he made it rich. He should be good for the country. Well, that's not true. Look what happened. Give tax breaks again to the guys and then everybody else suffers. More of the same. Nothing changes until the force of the hand of the people, which are the masses, and we run the world, until people realize that. And I think people are realizing that, and which is part of the awakening.
Well, that's the one perspective about that is what we just talked about, Al, the economic, the capitalism and his sociopathic tendencies and his greed and all that kind of stuff. But there's another perspective. And that happens if you pull back far enough, if you pull back very, very far, and you have to pull back very far, there is this perspective where everything is perfect. Everything has its place in a grand cosmic design. And Elon Musk is right where he needs to be. The poor starving kid in Africa is right where he needs to be. And don't worry, they'll change places. That kid that's starving in Africa will eventually go through having a period of wealth, if not on this planet or another. It's like, there's some kind of law of karma where everybody gets to have every role of everything in the grand scheme of things, you know?
What is considered wealth? You know, is like money wealth, and then maybe another place, another planet. Wealth is a wealth of consciousness, a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of well-being, a wealth of good health, a wealth of love. There's wealth of that everybody should have. They should have it. When they have that, then that comes around. You know, like having, it's just so unfortunate. You were talking about capitalism when it's created, you know, the diminish of individualism and everything. And it's demolished that. And then more of a colonialism, which is created of, you know, like old world. We need to break that ice of that old world mentality, the caveman mentality. You take away our technology. Where does cavemen with spears still, you know?
Well, it's interesting you bring up that because indigenous, I feel that, you know, they've done some studies of indigenous tribes that still live today, and they're geared towards cooperation and socialization within the tribe, and they make treaties with the tribes in the surrounding area, and they're ecological, meaning they only use what they need. They live in balance with nature. And I feel that's built into our genetics. Like, we are social beings, we are cooperative beings, And that's built into us. And for many, many years, we lived in that type of world. Now, were there problems? Of course. And are there some things better about the modern world? Of course. But you know that we have to return to that cooperation. We have to return to the ecology, sustainability, and somehow, but not, but with our technology, with our internet, with our all this. And I think that requires a revolution of consciousness for that to happen. An awakening is what some other people call it, and so on.
Yeah, it's governments that are autocrats that are trying to control the masses, saying that we have the free will has created the massive amounts of problems in our society, which isn't true at all. If we need more free will. It's greed is always going to be there no matter what. People like Elon Musk, are always going to be there. Bill Gates and people like that want nothing's never enough, but they shouldn't have the control of what they have over people. You know, like how things are set up, how I live, how society is set apart, like you're talking about indigenous people, how they live. They had a basic society. We could take that type of society and combine it with what we have already and make it more Earth-friendly, where we're living with Earth instead of against it. You know, like the Navajos and Hopis, like especially the Hopis, say they're not going to breed anymore because they're worried about the end of the world. So the end of our species, you know, so like that could happen with a meteor hitting Earth, you know, and we could wiped out like the dinosaurs. That can happen at any second. So then we're talking about here and now. We should live every minute like for here and now with love. And, you know, basically that's what we talk about in every podcast, you know, is that aspect.
You talk about the elites kind of, you know, being almost hopeless, but, you know, there's a more optimistic point of view. I remember studying Captain Al Hubbard and Aldous Huxley and this psychedelic revolution of the 50s and 60s before it became a mass phenomenon. Get everybody to do as much psychedelics as possible. Originally, the psychedelic movement with Captain Al Hubbard, with Aldous Huxley, with Humphrey Osmond, with all these different people all over the world. They had a plan to get the elites, like Elon Musk's of the time, church elites, business elites, politicians. They might have even, you know, there's a theory that they got it to Kennedy, and he tried it because he had a mistress that was also involved with Timothy Leary that said she gave it to him and blah, blah, blah. So their plan was, if you get these elites that are basically hopeless and greedy and egotistical, if you get them to try these psychedelics, that will be the only thing that could break them out of that egotistical mold. Because if you think about it, how are they going to, are they going to sit down and meditate? Are they going to listen to some spiritual teacher? Are they going to do any of these practices? No, but they might be open to trying something they could see in their hand because they're so materialistic and they might be curious. So that makes, I think,
a lot of sense completely. That I agree with that 1,000% because removing the ego with psychedelics is usually what happens with people like that. And they see themselves, what they really are. And then we can work on it from there. We have 8 to 12 hours to work on it. You know,
I would love to put Trump and Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Biden and all these people in a facility and give them a psychedelic trip once a week and give them therapy. And, you know, have them talk with regular people for at least 7 years. I think after 7 years, they'd come out, they'd be different people, you know, and that's how bad they are. Maybe it's not even one trip. Maybe they need a serious institutionalization. If anyone should be institutionalized, I don't think it should be these schizophrenic people. I think it should be these billionaires should be institutionalized. You know, I would be for that, you know.
And think about it. We can create a hologram room where you can create anything you want out of it, and the temperature, everything would be like seem real, but you have complete control over it, you know, like a setting from any time of any place.
Oh, you're saying, yeah. Like on Star Trek they had
that. Oh, that, yeah, similar to that. I've seen something, you know, like what they do with concerts now, you know, like
now that's a good question. Now I remember watching, I'm not a Star Trek fan now, but as a kid, I watched Star Trek The Next Generation, and the most interesting part of the show was the holodeck, where they create these holograms that you could interact with and feel totally real. And you could drink a holographic coffee and meet old Westerns. And they had all kinds of shows like that. Now, my question for you is, what would you do? Now, you're given a holodeck. It's exactly like the one on Star Trek. What's the first thing, and be honest now, that you do with it?
I put myself right back into the 60s peace movement, that part of the time. Probably 1967, 60 to 69, around there.
I think I would do exactly, I had the same thought. I would go, but I would be more specific. I would go recreate Woodstock exactly. And I would, you know, go have a good time there in the holodeck.
Maybe
see Janis Joplin, see Jimmy play the Star Spangled Banner in a good way. How did he take that song? The Star Spangled Banner. Everybody is so bored of it by now. We hate that song. We should admit we hate it. But yet Jimmy takes it and makes it beautiful, you know?
That was at the end of the show. Everybody was leaving, and now people are walking to their cars through the mud and spending 3 days in the rain watching. And then back in those days, the shows, even all the way up to the mid-70s, my first concert was War and ELO, and I can't remember, Blue Oyster Cult. War was headlining. It was with, what's his name, Eric Burdon. And this is 1971.
How old were you?
12.
Oh, wow.
My brother took me, and that was like...
So you're basically what the kids today would call a fogey.
Yeah, you know, like, think about it. Like, but everybody, like it was culture shock. And, you know, people passing joints. And I was just thinking about that. And then... I got high just off the, you know, being around the air, you know, this.
Right.
But it was like an experience I still remember. And then I start seeing concert one show after another after that and everything. And it was like, so I understood the music, the connection between music and the audience really early. Everything.
You know what would have been cool though? John Lennon. And all these other artists and the protest movements of the 60s had kind of died out by the time 1972 rolled around with McGovern against Nixon. But they were trying to revive it by planning a demonstration at the Republican National Convention where John and Yoko would appear in concert right at the same area as the Republican National Convention. And they were seriously planning it. Speakers, music, it was going to be huge. And many people would have showed up. There might have been problems with the police or whatever, but it was really going to happen. And then Nixon used the FBI to basically harass the Lennons and spy on them, and then they were going to deport them. And by the time they got to that level of harassment, being deported, all that fell through. It's amazing how, you know, basically there's another kind of law for these elites. They could do whatever they want to stop anything. You know,
yeah, I like what Hunter S. Thompson did to Nixon with Las Vegas airport. they went after him, and they crossed the fence and they drove the car right into the plane almost. And everything they went, you know, this is. But yeah. And plus Hunter S. Thompson was a big McGovern supporter. He loved McGovern. You know, people think he's a Republican. No, he was a big time liberal, hippie, and everything. Hanged out with the Hells Angels.
Well, he ran for sheriff in Colorado, I believe. And there was they made a documentary called Freak Power, and it was this whole big thing where a hippie was actually going to get power under S. Thompson on a freak ticket, open about psychedelic use, open about being a hippie. They didn't call it hippie; they called it freak. And he was going to be elected as sheriff. Imagine what good that could have done if he got there. More people would have ran for sheriff in their town. It could have been like a domino effect. That's why they had to stop it. Somebody had to stop it.
They're just ahead of their time. I mean, right now, if they're, you know, if he was around, they could do that. Look what happened in Oregon. I see that happening everywhere. Decriminalization of drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, my kids live up there. I have grandkids that live up there. And Yeah, Eileen's birthday today, my granddaughter's birthday, 13, yesterday.
Well, happy birthday. And what do you think, though? I mean, how come, you know, Black Lives Matter is an important movement, but how come often it's not mentioned the drug war in Black people's problems? Like, a lot of more, the systematic racism involved with the drug war, a lot of Black people are put in prison because they're doing what they can to survive selling drugs, and they don't want to hurt anybody, but they're put in jail for it. If you ended the drug war, wouldn't that be a great help to the Black community in the poor areas and so on?
Exactly. I mean, and I live in Los Angeles, and I live in particularly what they call Black Beverly Hills, which isn't really Beverly Hills, but anyways, it's nice. I mean, I live on this edge of it, Culver City. And I live right down the street where Nipsey Hussle was murdered, you know, the rap artist and everything. I live right down. There's still a memorial there. And some people give hope, but there was like with so much decades of disparity within the community, they're afraid. Everybody's has afraid of their landlord, afraid of everything. And things close early around here. I mean, it's not like down the street, the store is open to midnight, but in this neighborhood, it's closed at 10 p.m. Matter of fact, Kroger is closing Ralph's down the street because they didn't want to give the heroes pay of $5 more an hour for the people that worked on the front lines feeding us. So they decided that, like, they don't want to take a break, you know, pay their employees more, so they're going to close three stores in the neighborhood. Is that helping the neighborhood? No. And we talk about Black Lives Matter. I'm talking about that. I'm a white man in Black Lives Matter. Okay.
Yeah, me too. I gave a speech at a Black Lives Matter protest. It's available on my website, Bobby Here Love, Facebook. You have to really search for it because I have so much content, but I did give a speech at one of these protests. It was pretty good about oneness, about they were all for it. I gave this kind of speech about spirituality, about consciousness, about oneness, relating it to Black Lives Matter. And the people that were involved in that youth group really liked it. They approved my speech. They helped me write it better to stay focused on systematic racism. But they let me add my points about oneness and consciousness. And we're all the human race. And people really got hyped up about it. The biggest part people liked actually was I called Donald Trump the Antichrist. They were really cheering for that. So it was pretty fun. And I think that kind of stuff does make a difference. But I do want to ask you about, I was going to ask as far as, damn it, I forgot what I was going to say. It was important, but oh well.
Well, when you think of it, bring it up. But like what I'm going to say here about the neighborhood, you know, where like Nipsey Hussle did help the neighborhood a lot. He was bringing it up. And everything in Black owned businesses do help. What they did in Crenshaw down the street here on the street of Crenshaw is build a light rail. Okay. But they've taken 7 years to build it versus the light rail that goes from, you know, the street Santa Monica or Wilshire, which is a big street in Los Angeles, from downtown all the way to the beach. And that got done in 3 years. When a street in Beverly Hills has a pothole, it gets filled right away. The mayor in the city of Los Angeles is a mirror of America because this is Hollywood, correct? This is a mirror of reflection. And this is the most important. This is what I get off the beans I talk to. This is the reflection of this area of the world. And it needs to change. And it's like the industry is letting African Americans be in the game, but they're been used in the past by the industry of taking everything they own, their songs, half their music, half of everything. And then if they're like, they get destroyed and shot by a cop, you know, and the police are really bad. You know, here in Los Angeles, their Black Lives Matter right now is fought the police for rent. We have don't raise the rent, lower the rent. There's a 3 to 6% rent increase in Los Angeles County per year. You add that in 10 years, that's 30 to 60% rent increase, and wages remain the same. No, you know, wage increase. And then you got Kroger closing down because they don't want to pay people more so they can live. You know, so this $1,400 stimulus check, yeah, that's a big deal. Because I know people that live in my neighborhood, at the end of the month, they don't have any money to eat or anything. They're broke.
Yeah, it's really messed up. I wanted to run something by you with all this.
Okay.
When Floyd, George Floyd got murdered by the white police officer kneeling on him, and we all saw in the video, and it was shocking. One of my former college buddies, a friend, he posted about it, saying some things. And then I was talking about systematic racism and those sorts of issues and the drug war and cops having police. But some of his friends started saying, this is not about race. Why'd you bring race into this? That has nothing to do with race. It has to do with abuse of power. They were so adamant that it had nothing to do with race, that black people are treated fine, that more white people are killed by the police than black people, that white people have it worse, even some of them are saying. And I was just, debating with them, not meanly, just saying, look, hey, your guys are not dealing with your own racism. That set them off. Once I said they're not dealing with their own racism, all of a sudden my friend, or if he was my friend, started getting in there, attacking me, saying I have nothing better to do than talk about this stuff because I don't have a job, blah, blah, blah. He ends up blocking me. Now, all this time passes by, and I gave the speech of Black Lives Matter. I got more involved in this kind of stuff, and he comes back, and he's like, oh, yeah, everything's cool. We're all right, blah, blah, blah. We try to be okay with each other. He's like, I forgot even what it was about, but he was lying. He knew what it was about. And I decided, I really think I overlooked his racism all the years. I never saw him talk to a black person. He grew up in Jersey City, yet no black friends at all. I mean, not that that makes him racist, but I kind of like put pieces together, maybe he was racist. So the best thing to test out someone that they're racist is, I think, not a regular racist that says the N-word all the time, but someone that might be in denial of it or cover it up. I said, I want you just to tell me that there is white privilege. And I gave him like an ultimatum to see if he would make a big deal out of it. And all of a sudden we got in this argument and I end up not being friends with him. And then I put together the pieces of things he said over the years and I realized he was really racist. And I thought, I love him dearly. I cherish the times we had in college, but I don't want to be friends with a racist, Is that so bad, I don't like him on the ego level. I love him on the soul level. He's one with me. But on ego level, I don't want to be into someone like him and talk to someone like him,
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I in Portland, Oregon, go back to that in the 90s, like everybody doing DIY, do-it-yourself type of thing, and everybody coming in with the microphone and speaker, da-da-da, whatever. But I worked with hip-hop groups. I did a mixture on Bohemia After Dark, the TV show. I did a mixture of rap and rock and everything mixed together, everything. Everything. I did no VJ, no DJ, no going, hey, you're going to watch this video next. It was just the music, man. Anyways, I didn't go, hey, it's me. I'm famous. I never did that once. I despise it. Even I work with bands with big, huge egos, and that's why I like doing this. And I noticed hip hop groups have big egos, like rock bands.
Yeah. It's hard for a musician to get successful not to have a big ego.
Yeah, they have to. It's all show. You have to have the show. I admire the connection between the audience and the band. When I was doing the camera, I always was the taller dude between, in Lollapaloozas and Warp Tours and stuff, and I was with the press corps.
Well, I think an exception to those rules might be, say, Bob Marley, George Harrison. They didn't have big egos. I think they were spiritual beings awakening to that. We're all spiritual, but,
They took their fame wisely and used it wisely, and even George Harrison talked about it. But with going back to this guy named, we called him Nazi Doug. We were talking about racist, and then Aryan Nation was really, really big out of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. They're based out of Idaho. There was an Ethiopian student that was an exchange student and went to Portland State, was murdered by Aryan Nation, and then it made on the news. And this is the late 80s, part of the early 90s. It leaked into skinheads were everywhere. And with the could tell who the racists were by their hair, how they dressed in the jumpsuits and all. And but there's some of them that were like lived there and they grew up racist through their parents. And then Nazi Doug, everybody, oh, it's Nazi Doug. He hates black people. Then eventually Nazi Doug got invited to a rap show with many, many black people.
Wow.
And he had an awakening. And he turned around, you know what I mean, completely flipped, 360 degree flip. And then he, you know, he's still the same with, you know, not against what he did, you know, and he fights against all that. There's some people that get awakened and from all those.
No, but that brings up a good point. He spent some time with a lot of black people and he changed. Even there is liberal progressive racism. I'll speak for my own. Grew up where my dad said the N-word, saying the N-word is bad and we're all one race and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, and I grew up in a mixed school where the black kids hanged out with the white kids and the Spanish kids, and it was all mixed. And there was race issues, but not like growing up with a bunch of whiteys calling everybody the N-word. It was much different. But yeah, I didn't notice that I had subconscious racial things in me till I moved to this place, Egg Harbor City, where I started spending a lot of time with black people more than ever, like groups of black people. And I was the token white guy. And I noticed occasionally I'm not racist, but I would have a thought that was racist and I wouldn't identify with it, but I'd notice it come up.
Yeah, you just feel uncomfortable. You just feel uncomfortable because of like I went to a Bloods, this band called The Click, and I was doing a rap show and it was like me and two other white guys and everybody, the whole audience was black and everything. And it's kind of like they had us on stage too. And it's like, I didn't feel comfortable going on stage. Steve, and I can't remember the other guy's name, went on stage with them and everything, like this, you know, standing there. That's what they did. You know, like everybody's partying, right? And then afterwards, we got invited to the church, and it was a Baptist church right by the Soul Food place in Northeast Portland.
Yeah.
And you've never been to a place like this, the people that ran the church, you know, and then they rented the room for the band, and they had gin and juice. They were serving gin and juice.
Like Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, and I didn't even know.
That's what I noticed, man.
I drank some of that. Like, oh, my God, I don't drink alcohol. Like, oh, God, hey, come on, you got to drink.
Well, it's funny, though, because you know from what you just said, after I spent a lot of time over many years hanging out with black people, going to black church, I went to, you know, all that kind of stuff, I noticed it did change me. A lot as far as all that subconscious racial stuff that I didn't know I had absorbed from my dad's friends, used the N-word a lot. Who knows where from culture, from the media, from whatever. It just went all away. I don't think I have any of it that I'm aware of. Yeah. And that just come from spending time with people. I think if you took all these races, you put them with a bunch of black people that are, you know, most black people are really nice. You put them with that. All of a sudden, they change, you know?
Yeah, it's like Terrence, this guy Cool Nuts, that's his rap name, it's Terrence Scott. He's going to love me saying this. And he was the host of The Ledge, the rap show we had. Kind of like branch Bohemia After Dark, and then we had a Ledge, just like kind of like local hip hop artist, and just like then there was a host, Terrence, and then he would promote his shows that he had coming up. He did all the bands touring, coming through Portland, and, you know, was the guy that did it. Could build his name up and everything. Work with these bands we talked about. Like, one time we got in an argument, and he says, like, white people are like this, white people are like that. You know, black people can't be racist. I went, dude, everybody could be racist one way or another. You know what I mean? I said, I understand what you're saying about white people. These guys can't dance. You have thin lips, da, da, da. Like, and I'm laughing with it. You know what I mean? Trying to see if I get under his skin and start saying shit about black people. And I didn't. You know what I mean? He was trying to set me up. And, you know, and then it's like, you know, like I said, like a person, it may not be racist for a person that's blind walking across the street. Look at that blind guy walking across the street, right? That guy can't hear. He can't hear. That guy is deaf. It's titles the entitlement, like having titles. You're that, you're this, them people, those people.
The phrases it's us of, versus them instead of we're all us.
Us, exactly. So the phrases of the words of the phrases of the words are important. You know, like how you know, like, and then like, yeah, I'm white privileged. I grew up middle class and everything. And yes, and I've been sheltered from all that completely as a kid.
Right.
And everything. And I'm guilty of it, you know? So like, but I'm still always in the betterment of myself. Right. Yeah. You know, like even like I'm still trying to get over my whiteness. You know what I mean?
You are a honky cracker, Mr. Charlie, yeah, for no sure. Kidding. But regardless of you being a honky, I have this black neighbor who's, you know, a friend of mine, kind of, but he's just a really good neighbor. And we talk, I see him walking down the street. We talk a lot. We hang out in the park, whatever, that kind of thing. So I guess I would call that a friend. Anyway, I'm like, I always go up to him. I'm like, hey, Miles, where are the white women at? You know, and that kind of thing. And he finds that really funny, you know, but another black person might find that to be racist, you know, but he finds it funny. So it comes down to context and being aware of the people you're around, what they would find funny and not. Like, we live in an age where a lot of comedians are taking flack for that kind of stuff. And I don't necessarily think that's good or bad. That's just a cultural trend, right?
I mean, it's just, it's different everywhere. I mean, yeah, it's a cultural thing. Like, it's regional, too. Like, you're in the Northeast, but in the Northwest, it's similar to the weather in the climate of the Northeast to a degree. Northeast is colder because of the Atlantic Ocean. And if you go like the Southeast versus the Southwest, you know what I mean, with ideology, you know, and the ideology of the Southwest is so much different. Of it's basically the same. You got the Bible Belt going from Southern California all the way to Florida, you know what I mean, that Bible Belt ideology, redneck kind of mentality to a degree, where the North has more of an open consciousness of political freedom and freedom, period. Like, how people, I think people hate California because they're not California. Yeah. And you know, it's a beautiful state. I mean, God, I hate it and love it here. I hate LA and I love LA at Los, and then the people
you gotta, you just, no, I suggest you listen to that Randy Newman song, I Love LA, 24 hours in darkness while on 5 grams of mushrooms. Just eat all the mushrooms, turn off the lights, and listen to that song over and over again. You'll like LA from then on.
Short people have no reason to live. I think of that when he did that one. God, that guy. Yeah, he's that'd right? be a
I
trip.
Love that. I'm
yeah.
sorry, but I love that Randy Newman song.
Yeah.
I love LA. I just love it.
Yeah, that's a good song. He's good. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's so damn expensive, and it has so much potential. I mean, it is the mirror of America and the world because it's Hollywood, man. And they spend, like, my big gripe is with Garcetti, our mayor here, and Black Lives Matter protesting, we're talking about that, is like, yeah. He needs to listen to them. Don't raise the rent. There's like, he's like, he had like a rent lottery where your rent would be covered. Like, you may get lucky, 1 in 1,000 here. Like, that's not how you play people's lives, man.
Have you ever seen that YouTube guy with the red hair that makes fun of spiritual people and hippies? I forget his name now. He's pretty popular.
God, no.
Anyway, so he was really popular. He had really awesome videos where he was like playfully making fun of yoga and conspiracy theories and this, that, and the other. Yeah, like the way spiritual people talk and New Age things. And I really liked him. All of a sudden, I think because alt-right is really popular online now, he must have switched to alt-right to make more money and get sponsors. Because all of a sudden, he switched from being this cool comedian to being super alt-right. And he put out this, you know, he's really into coronavirus being fake. He put this whole thing out where L.A. is basically communist, he said, the mask. And he was obsessed with the masks and all this kind of stuff. And they're not, neoliberalism is not communism. It's neoliberalism. I don't know what he's talking about. You know, I just think he just wants to be popular. Alt-right is in with all the white people, not me, not you, but a lot of white people, they're into alt-right that pretends it's not racist, that pretends it's about all the people and revolution and all these socially aware things. But in reality, it's self-delusional thinking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, again, I live in the neighborhood.
And is it communist?
No, I mean, we were in the epicenter of the world at one point, you know, South LA, yeah, part of South Los Angeles. And
are masks, you know, part of a plot to get us to get cancer? He was convinced not only did masks not work, but they cause more health problems than they prevent. He was convinced of that.
Well, let's look. I mean, prior to the pandemic, would you wear a mask? I mean, you wear a mask, like I go to Home Depot and I buy a mask to do spray painting, or you spray in because I don't want to breathe in the fumes. Maybe he should not wear a mask doing that. You know what I mean? If he doesn't believe in masks, I mean, couldn't the fumes from the paint hurt him?
I felt sorry for him because he had fourth stage brain cancer, and the doctors told him that he's going to die. He doesn't want to accept that he's going to die. So he does all these new agey things to survive, and that's really beautiful. And he thinks he's going to cure it himself. Maybe he will. But because of that, the doctors told him he's going to die. If he accepts Western medicine, masks, coronavirus, vaccines, if he accepts some of that stuff, he might have to accept his own death. So I think that's really it. You know, you have to look where these people are coming from.
Well, look at Rush Limbaugh. I mean, look what just happened to him. I mean, he was the king of propaganda. Are we missing Rush Limbaugh? I'm not. I didn't shed a tear.
To say I am glad he is dead.
I'm not saying I'm glad. You know, I'm not saying that either. But I would I'm not missing
on
him.
His grave the cha-cha. I'm serious. If I saw his grave, and I wouldn't get in trouble, I would dance on his grave and sing a song and be happy about it. The world is a better place without that Nazi. You know, I really think so.
Yeah, a lot more to go. But we should take a break here. Let's take a break. Giant Rock Podcast will be right back.
Do you believe in flying saucers? Do you believe in air, even though you don't see it? It's as obvious as heaven or hell.
They've had it tough. They've had it so tough because they've been women in America. And they've been Hispanic women in America. And they've had to play softball as women in America. And it's really, and the deck has been stacked against them. And because they've had to go through life eating excrement sandwiches every day because of Ronald Reagan and George Bush or Rush Limbaugh, they're owed a seat on the Supreme Court. Doesn't matter if they couldn't spell cat if you spotted them the C and the T.
Even now, in this very room, you can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. What truth? That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back.
In our top story, America's second most trusted man, Saint Gavin Newsom, is being taken down by conspiracy theorists who believe he has harmed California. The Recall Gavin effort now has over 2 million signatures, which is 600,000 more than they need in order to recall Newsom. In an expression of very characteristic honesty, St. Newsom said his recall is without merit and is only being done because of political reasons. Newsom, California's first used car salesman to pretend to be governor, is in good spirits and is reportedly still using the same amount of hair gel as usual. According to forensic experts, Newsom's leadership is exactly why the Corleone family never let Fredo be in charge. Will Newsom ever get to the number one spot of America's most trusted man?
I would say this is sort of an unusual event. It's funny, we're all spread all over the world in different rooms. Everybody's locked up. But for me, this is how I've always lived. So much of my life, as I think is increasingly the case for you, wherever you are, is intermediated by these screens. We spend less time outside and more time staring into glass or through glass to connect with that larger world, with something beyond ourselves.
You don't know what that order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Out of order. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen. Boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like a sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that. You think you're merely sending this splendid foot soldier back home to Argonne with his tail between his legs, but I say you are executing his soul! And why? Because he's not a bad man. Bad man. You hurt this boy, you're gonna be bad bums. The lot of you. And Harry, Jimmy, Trent, wherever you are out there, fuck you too!
Stand down, Mr. Slade.
I'm not finished. As I came in here, I heard those words. Cradle of leadership. Well, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. And it has fallen here. It has fallen. Makers of men, creators of leaders, be careful what kind of leaders you're producing here. I don't know if Charlie's silence here today is right or wrong. I'm not a judge or jury, but I can tell you this. He won't sell anybody out to buy his future. And that, my friends, is called integrity. That's called courage. Now that's the stuff leaders should be made of. Now I have come to the crossroads in my life. I always knew what the right path was. Without exception, I knew. But I never told. You know why? It was too damn hard. Now here's Charlie. He's come to the crossroads. He has chosen a path. It's the right path. It's a path made of principle that leads to character. Let him continue on his journey. You hold this boy's future in your hands, committee. It's a valuable future. Believe me. Don't destroy it. Protect it. Embrace it. It's gonna make you proud one day, I promise you.
On such, you got such, haibe such, non echo sebe such. Miramana loce, guru darshana tai. Bilapkare chatrik kinyai trikana utare shantana ave bina darshana santa piare jio o gole jio gola kumare guru darshana santa piare jio. on such, you got such, I be such, non echo say be such. Tira mucho so hava ji, yo so heja dunabani. Jira hua de ki saring a bani. Dana so de jahatu na visia. Mere sanjana mita murare ji yo. O go le ho go la kumare. Guru Sanjana Mita Murare Chiyo. Ah, such you got such, I be such, none echo say be such. Ikka gare na mila te, ta kali juga hota. Una karamiya priya tura bhagavanta. Moera na viheve nida na ve. Bina deke agura darbare jiyo. O gore jiyo gola kumare. Tisa sache agura darbare jiyo. Ah, such you got such, I be such, nane ko se be such. Bagaho agura santa melaya. Prava avanya sigara mea paia. Seva kari pala chasa na vichura. Jana naka dasa tu mare chiyo. O gole chiyo gola kumare. Jana naka dasa tu mare chiyo. Ah, such you got such, I be such, none echo say be such. Ah, such you got such, I be such, none echo say be such. Ah, such you got such, I be such, none echo say be such. Ah, such you got such, I be such, none echo say be such.
We're back with Giant Rock Podcast, and I want to talk about here and now in the future and everything. So, like, what do you want to start with on that, Baba?
Well, let's start on the simplicity that spiritual awakening is about. How about that? You know, yes. You look around, and especially, I don't mean to pick on the new agey thing, but it's so easy to, so I'm going to. It seems to take these simple spiritual concepts like being, like getting beyond separation into oneness, being part of everything, into these super complex, heady ideas of trips about things. And, you know, I don't mean to put down, there is a plane of reality where you are a mythological unicorn fairy or a star seed from another, like all that exists just as real as the physical plane. But it's not awakening. It's just another trip. And every trip will eventually lead to the here and now where you are just one with it all. You're not sitting there thinking, I am one with it all. You are being it. It's so simple. The spirituality in its purest whatever is very simple. It's beyond thought. It's beyond separation. It's just this essence inside of us that we could rest in, and it's not in words. Words can't contain it. Content, now you can name it God or Ram or whatever, and that's important, but it doesn't have a name. It's beyond all that kind of stuff. That's why that you have the Zen tradition, which is all about that. They're like, who needs a religion? Who needs a holy book when you could just listen to the sound of the rain
or the trees move through the wind? Or you could feel the wind against your face, depending anywhere, you know.
That could bring you right to the present moment. If you just simply, that's a meditation I do. I just be with what arises. If it's a sensation in my knee, I be with that. If it's a thought or a memory, I be with that. And that gets me out of my head. It gets me into my heart where I'm one with it all. that simple. It's not an effort thing. Now, I think effort is important at some stages in the spiritual journey. Desperation to get enlightened helps. Much effort to huff and puff and get enlightened. That's very important. Ramakrishna got enlightened through making a lot of effort in his practice. But I think at a certain point, you realize that your being is enough and you can let go of effort and return to the simplicity that spirituality is something we all have. We don't need to be a saint or a guru or a new agey, whatever, star seed and see orbs and go to astral planes and all that. We just need to simply be right here and now.
Yeah, and that we were talking about the music last podcast. You were asking me about that. Like the first break when we did the break with James, you know, and that was from Inner Light. That was the Inner Light Challenge that Danny Harrison, George Harrison's son, put out on YouTube about 6 months ago. And there was and people put that one song out in different ways, you know, through their own instruments and their own method. And there's hundreds of them. So, like, I did a collection of that and do it on a repetitive repeat of a mantra. And I play that. That's my centering. I did that for a while, everything. But it's like my wife Jennifer, she has struggles with her past. You know, like at night thinking about past pains, and that's where we talk about here and now. Let's like put that behind us. What about how you feel right now? Are you happy?
Yeah.
You know, so that it's been that even something that simple. You know, like telling your own loved one like they're. Pains like they may not know, and she's centered really well, you know, but it's just like things come up no matter what, you know what I mean?
Past well, that brings pains. Up a question. I mean, Ram Dass used to call psychology without spirituality as rearranging the furniture in the prison cell. You could make your prison cell really nice. It helps you to work out and go over these traumatic events. You put a TV in your prison cell, you put a nice couch, it's kind of nice, but it's still a prison cell. If you want the real deal to break out of prison, you have to go for these spiritual stuff, and that's going to take these methods. But the issue is you don't want to become a good meditator. You want to get free. Meditation, psychedelics, yoga, all these are just methods to get to the place. You don't want to end up trapped in your method. And I'm a good meditator. I meditate and get real calm. No, you want to use the method to get free, to discover who you really are, not who you think you are.
I've been with different people, like doing with CE5. Everybody has their method, and some people are really intense into the ritual, and I'm not as much as intensive into the ritual, because I learned in a different way that helped me in my own way. And I tell that to people, like, I, you know, I have problems hearing. I'm getting my hearing fixed as we anyways, I have problems hearing, so I can not hear people. You know, if you're, I could probably hear your voice, but certain people, but you come in more in tune with things. You know, when you know one senses diminishes and another one enhances, and meaning like if your sight is more, if you have good sight, then and your hearing's not so good, then your sight becomes better. You know, and then maybe you're more in tune to your hearing at that point because you're trying to hear, or the vice versa with the sight. You know, the senses, the taste, the smell, the hear, the sight.
What about seeing smells and smelling synesthesia? You ever had that experience?
Oh, yeah. And I get an energy from that. I go to certain areas in like on the coast, like, kind of drawn to a certain area. You get drawn to a certain area. You go to that, even traveling, you go in that pattern of that area that you're familiar with. You may not have ever been there, but you kind of look at, I've been on a map. I feel like I need to go there. There's a sensation of going there too. When you for me, Central Coast, California, you know, it's like separated from Southern California with all the cities, San Diego, Los Angeles, and it's more of a...
Well, I want to go to this place, it's this town in, Tennessee or something, or one of those states that no one's ever heard of or nothing. I can't even remember the name of it, I had written down, but it's this one bar in this town, a population of 200 people, as one business there, a bar, and it's in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the country, and I can't even remember the state it's in, but one time I was asking Siri on my iPhone, where is my guru? And I was asking over and over, and you know Siri, she only answers questions she's programmed to do, but then all of a sudden, she went out of our programming or something. It was kind of a miracle, and what happened was this one specific town came up, and I was like, whoa, I'm pretty amazed. I'm going to look up this town. I look up this town and found this bar called the Pink Palace, and it was really interesting, and I contacted the people there, and they talked about it like it was a Mecca. They said the people that come into this bar are very peaceful, and they're simple folk, and they're in, they have their own kind of spirituality, and you're more than welcome to come and visit. I want to go visit someday. I'm serious. Once COVID's over, my brother-in-law said he would pay for me to take a trip out there. To he'd pay the whole almost like $600 of the cost. So I just have to get a little more. And then my friend Adam said he'd go with me. So after COVID's over, I'm going to go to this place, the Pink Palace. And I looked up how I would get there, the Uber cost, the plane flight, and all this kind of stuff. But I don't want to do it till COVID's over. But that's going to be my Mecca, this place in the middle of America that no one ever goes to. I think it would make an awesome story. I'll videotape it with my phone and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I went to get my shot the other day at the VA, the Veterans Administration in West Los Angeles. And like the West Los Angeles VA campus, like you think it's all military and people with military. No, it's like a golf course, dude. It's like it's really like the energy is weird. It's fucking awesome. And I don't know why, but you'd think like there's been a lot of pain here, but for some reason you don't feel that there. It's weird. But anyways, like the doctor was so nice, like you're going to be able to do this and this and this. Like I was glad to get it. You know what I mean? We were like talking last time, like James, I'm not going to get it. Like, but you know, because he gets sick from it, but I think, you know, like once everybody gets the shot, we'd be able to do all these things really quickly. And I mean, they're doing twice as much as they're projected. There was like places crammed packed full of people trying to get it. You know,
If it was so bad, there's so many people that got it. They, you know, if it was bad, they'd be having problems. I mean, so many people I know have gotten, I haven't gotten it yet, but I plan to when it's easier to get. And, vaccines have a solid science behind them. It would be impossible for there to be a conspiracy to put nanobots. I just think it's absurd.
Yeah,
I'm all about conspiracies, but not when it comes to vaccines, because the science is so strong behind vaccines.
I got a question for that. Like, would they put the GPS chips? Would it be in the first or second shot?
that's what I want. What does that have to do? They try. There is real conspiracies, like Edward Snowden, that said they're tracking us through phones and that sort of thing, and they have a search engine that could search up anybody's private.
That's
information.
That's true. Keyword. The PRISM program. I mean, the government's had PRISM programs since 2000.
Did you ever see that movie Snowden?
Uh huh. Yes.
That was a great movie, right?
I mean, he should be pardoned, you know, I think. And same thing with Reality Winner needs to be pardoned, too. And Chelsea Manning, she needs to be pardoned, too. All three of those.
I agree. These people are heroes exposing this stuff. And instead of being treated as such, they're being, you know, they would be, like they said, they told Edward Snowden, oh, you could have a trial, but they won't agree to a fair trial. And they said, we promise not to torture you. Oh, great. You know,
wonderful. We'll put you in prison for life. Run them right into your arms to that. But see, the thing is, he's in Russia, of all places to be. You know, that's my big drawback. And then with WikiLeaks, the guys from there, Assange, I don't care if he rots in prison. You know, and because he was trying to overthrow our country with Putin and Trump.
I wonder about that. So. I mean, I definitely think the information he leaked is accurate about the war machine of America, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, but that doesn't make us we're bad in our own ways by influencing, you know, politicians, you know, the CIA eliminating politicians or people that have influence.
Oh, everything. I speak out often against the American imperialist capitalist empire. I really think America is the worst country in the history of the world as far as people they've killed in their genocide of Vietnam, as far as the concentration camps now on the border, as far as the Guantanamo Bay torturing people, as far as war crimes across the world, as far as economic terrorism to these countries, as far as what we did in Iraq. I mean, I really think people in America are blind to see that because we're brainwashed with American exceptionalism. Now, am I saying Russia and China are so great countries? No, but America is just bad, if not totally worse. I think worse.
You were talking about Huxley earlier, you know, with LSD. Yeah. But let's talk, you know, with Huxley, with the Brave New World, you know, like the Soma. Well, that's where we're at between that and 1984. Or
I like that. I never read Brave New World, but I do like it. Huxley's Doors of Perception.
Yeah, that's great too. Doors of Perception. But you know, this is not a fictional thing. You know, versus
1984 though, I did read that. That's a terrifying book. And in fact, he wrote that. People say he was talking about communism and socialism. No, he was talking about fascism and totalitarianism. He was in fact a democratic socialist. People don't know that.
Yeah, that's true. Orwell. And yeah. And then plus with, you know, like interplanetary, you know, with War of the Worlds, that, you know, that was with Orson Welles, what he did with the radio show. People thought it was real.
I remember and, that. Yeah, I think everybody's learned about that by now, right?
Yeah, they should. I mean, if people don't know, they should check out the book. There's a recording on YouTube with Orson Welles of the actual show that's on YouTube.
What about the similarities between that and the people that thought the QAnon thing, that all the Biden and all those people were going to get arrested that day? It was kind of like similar, eerily similar in a way.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are still around. Like, I follow a couple people on Telegram and everything, just out of, like, Donald Trump Jr., I just, like, on his feed, just to, you know, like, know what these guys are talking about. And it makes,
what are they talking about these days? I have no idea.
Biden's senile, and then him slipping on the stairs. And then these other guys, the QAnon guys, are, like they're still the message. Like, they put something out there. It could happen between now and 50 years, you know, so, like, they've pushed the goalpost farther and farther back. Oh, my God,
that's like serious cult behavior right there. That's like the end of the world people, where they're like, it will end this day. And then they're like, sorry, messed up. It's in 5 years. Sorry, we messed up 5 more years. It's classic cult behavior.
Biden's in a virtual studio with a virtual set, and he's not really in the White House.
I want to go on that virtual set and see what it's all about. Do you know some people hook me up with it?
You know, there's, so that's going on. I mean,
He's busy eating babies, right? But they think they eat babies.
But, you know, like, there was people on Twitter yesterday. People on Twitter yesterday, should Trump be able to get back on Twitter? I went, fuck no, man. That was his whole thing, using the propaganda tool with Twitter. You know, don't let him back on. Now he's going to start his own social media.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm actually for letting all those people on. I don't agree with Trump at all, but I feel you should be able to, I'm more a pure free speech person.
Right.
Even if you're inciting violence, I just think they should let it all fly and we deal with the consequences. But, you know, that's not a popular point of view, though, because he's going to find way to get information to people. They'll have alternate websites. So you might as well just let it all fly, because, you know, it's funny because a lot of people on the left, like I'm on the left, they say they're using this go after Trump thing. Well, that's fine. Nobody wants Trump on there on the left. But if they go after him like that, they could go after socialist organizations. They could go after left wing, which they started to ban some left wing websites on Facebook. In fact, this one left wing Facebook thing I follow called Soapbox, they made them say, we are a tool of Russia. I mean, they had to say that, you know, so there you go.
Wow. I mean, yeah, it comes not a surprise what these guys are doing. You know what I mean? It's just, it's like they post stuff on the social media, and that's why I don't post anything really solid anymore on Facebook anymore like that. I just keep it to the UFOs, space, science like that.
Well, you're obviously a tool of Putin himself to convince us that we are all gay. And I'm starting to believe it. I'm going to get gay married tomorrow because of the brainwashing infrared stuff you're putting out on behalf of Putin, and I'm going to get gay married tomorrow because of your propaganda machine and the QAnon, lizard people, flat earth, super conspiracy.
Well, they're all crazy. I mean, Jim Jones, it's like I tell people it's like Jim Jones meets Heaven's Gate, and then Heaven's Gate's looking for a new leader. You could be it.
I'm excited. I'm going to be the new leader.
The new leader of Heaven's Gate.
Bob and Here Love cult. What would my cult be like? All right. So listen, everybody. You have to stand on one foot, and the new age where we all become super lizard people is in 3 days. And I want you all to have pictures of kangaroo all over your house and to do a plant called Datura. Eat the Torah every day and look at these pictures of kangaroos. Go. Let's start the cult.
Yeah. And I heard they eat placentas too.
We could include that. We could come up with a super cool cult and everybody has to donate 50% of their salary. Bim, bam, boom. We get an island somewhere. Let's do it.
Yeah. They have to wear jumpsuits.
Yeah.
You could get custom made ones, have them look like indie racers, you know, have it orange with a white stripe.
On a serious note, if you had a DeLorean time machine and you could not go back to Woodstock, okay, that's what we all do. But if you could change one thing in history, come on, what would you do? DeLorean time machine.
Oh, gee. God dang, man. Which part? they say, oh, I'll go save Kennedy. No, I'm not going to save Kennedy, you know.
Oh, come on.
No. Like I saw a show on that. They saved him, then he fucked up the world.
Save Martin Luther King then. How about that?
I would like everybody like where you could change the democracy into what it really should be, you know, and somehow like go back to the forefathers and like, okay, this is gonna happen in the future, guys. You gotta put this in the Constitution. because you would be burned at the stake,
and they take your DeLorean time machine and destroy it.
Yeah. Then I have to take a train and get Marty McFly to help me. Or his great grandfather that's at 5 years old at that point.
Right.
Shit. But, you know, like, God, if you think about it, like, it's like some of these people, like, on the QAnon believe, like, you know, like the Matrix, the red pill or the blue pill. You watch it. If you take the red pill, you're going to go down a deep rabbit hole.
Well, the movie Matrix has been used to describe a lot of different stuff like that. The vegan movement used it. The QAnon used it. Some spiritual people used it. I've used it for some of my videos. It's just an analogy.
Yeah, I know, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean by that? It's like there's always truth to some of these conspiracies. Some truth, like a matter of fact, Woody Allen coming out.
Epstein, right? Epstein is a real guy. He was killed by the CIA, most likely. And he was, and Bill Clinton and Trump were all his friends involved with the sex slavery thing. I mean, that was true. So they take that true stuff and then they build it into this whole religion, you know, because people are like, well, if Epstein got killed, that means all this other stuff is true.
Yeah, like in the new documentary that's on HBO Max streaming thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the wife.
I can't sit through that stuff. And someone was criticizing me. They're like, how can you, if you can't sit through this stuff, how can you talk about it? I mean, you should sit and watch these documentaries. Well, and he sent me like 20 links on YouTube conspiracy movies. I'm not going to sit down and watch 8 hours of boring conspiracy movies. They put spooky, man, you know what they do. They put spooky music in.
I know.
They have these people talking. It's all the same bullshit. I don't want to see it.
There's so many people doing that now that becoming YouTube curators and everything. I was a YouTube partner in 2007 when Google bought YouTube and everything. Oh. And then I was doing the music thing, and like when they're ranking 1 through 10, you know, the top 10 on hip hop, I did a hip hop channel. But it's like they if you're not a partner, and if you
basically got a lot of money, so send me $40.
Yeah, like it's like Facebook, you know, like the same thing. Like I told you, like I give them $10, and the next thing you know, I got 3,000 likes on one photo. Versus if I don't do that, I
get
when nothing.
I get the Biden check, I nothing. Think I want to try advertising for my podcast.
Yeah, but
in
just,
fact, everybody check out Under the Blanket on any podcast. It's available on all the podcasts.
It's on all the streaming platforms too. People, every one of them. I think there's like you're on Amazon now too.
Yeah, I'm on all of them. I mean, my views have been only like reaching 4,000 now total. So that's not that good. It's not that bad.
It's not
but
that bad.
You know, I got a steady audience, but not nothing.
Every time I do a little advertisement, I get a little bump. You know what I mean? I get like this episode will probably get like 300 or 400. You know,
what was the last one? What that one we get last?
Last one we've gotten at. We're at 259 right now.
Nice, that's cool. I don't really want to get caught up in that, but it's interesting to just something to talk about. You know, I don't think it's what it's about.
I
really think it's important to know. People out there, if you only touch one person's heart in your whole life, one person you touch their heart with your painting, with your creativity, with your podcast, with your book, with your whatever, you only touch one person's heart. That person's heart that you touch is connected to the whole entire universe.
Oh, so
lighten up.
You said it too well. I can't believe it. That's perfect. Because like Channel 19, KPHE, when I first like leased it out, like I couldn't get Bohemia After Dark in Phoenix on anywhere. We want to pay you to play this music and you give us money to do it. And I went, fuck that. I don't want to give you money to do that. You know what I mean? I was used to them playing my stuff. So I did my own thing. Like you can lease a radio station. You can lease a TV station, you know, that a little small one. It's not a building where there's people running with cameras or anything. It's like it's on a mountain where the towers are.
Well, you know what I like about your podcast, The Giant Rock? I really like you. A really cool beginning with, movie with the Golden Ticket. And you got like one time you included that interview. I mean, it's just like it's inventive and it's I like that you throw in the music and stuff like that one. You had that song at the end that was so beautiful. I got to remember that
song.
That's
Blake Boyer. He's
send that to me again because I really like that song and I forgot to listen to it again.
Yeah, he got rid of his SoundCloud for some reason. It's weird.
That was an amazing song.
I've been trying to tell him, send me more. I played out his stuff a little bit and he's here and now. He's not like, I just throw in Guru because I don't know why. He doesn't want to go by that. You know. But
well, a lot of people put down that term so no one wants to use it anymore, but... It's just because of the 70s.
His thing,
after Ram Dass popularized Guru with the Here Now became the hippie Bible and sold millions of copies, all these gurus from the East came to America, and a lot of them, they hadn't quite gotten enlightened, so they gave in to all these temptations. And boom, the word guru has a bad name now because of that, I think.
Well, Blake does this. You know, they have a gathering with yoga. And they don't usually, like, he'll just come and jam, get the vibe and jam music with his friends. He doesn't know what he's going to play until he gets there and gets the vibe.
Right.
So that's what I like about it. It's so fucking beautiful. That's perfect. Because, like, I get the energy off that. He's not new age or anything like that. But he likes going to places like... He does real estate and he makes a little bit of money and then goes and he travels everywhere. He went to India. I told you about that where he went in a cave for 2 hours and they had no light. And
that was an awesome story. I've had experiences that are like that. So when someone tells me a story like that, I give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know it's possible,
and kind of going back to the CE5 thing, you know, like people like, so I take that everything with a grain of salt with like we were talking about Corey Good and then David Wilcock is another person that's kind of like that. You know what I mean? And he,
oh, that's
like,
the guy on Guy on TV.
Yeah. And he's pushing the QAnon stuff,
down. Anyway, before I put him down, I want to say everybody's God. We're all one. And he is just as beautiful as anybody, and there's no separation.
Yeah, and
that on another level, he's a douchebag, and he's lying, and he's trying to make money, and he's throwing people off that are interested in this otherworldly topic. And I really think he's a total scam artist. And I also think Stephen Greer, as much as he does put out some true information, he might work for the CIA, I wonder.
Yeah, because, like, why is it, it's his method, you know, and then to go to, I have people I know that given him money to make his movie that was already in the can. And his movie that he just made was already in the can and put on Amazon, but then he got his followers to donate on a crowdfunding of thousands of dollars.
His movies are just recycled. He had really good.
Yeah, there's no new content. He's not shooting anything new. What I'm trying to say is, like, I do film. I got a degree in media arts. You know what I mean? This is what I do. And he's got these, and then he's got Contact in the Desert. He was supposed to do last year, and everybody can go with him camp out at Joshua Tree National Park in Yucca Valley in the Mojave Desert for $3,000 a person. Now, why would I want to do that? I mean, if you're so free, and I mean, I go to the park for free. I get all that. I get the sky for free. I don't pay for that. I don't go and
he lost pay me for as that. Soon as he started promoting that the government has these spaceships too, and that they're gonna fake an alien invasion called Project Bluebeam. Once he started promoting that, I really think that's disinformation. The intelligence agencies, they want to scare people. They want people to be all frightened, think, oh no, they'll fake an alien invasion. Oh no, they have all this power. They don't want the people to know that it's like a system and we all have the power. The people have the power. They want the people to feel like the elites are controlling everything and reptiles and all that. Because what does that do? It prevents the people from knowing they have the power and doing things like massive strikes, like information campaigns, like activism and things like that. I don't know. Just an idea. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably true because like it's always it's a deterrent. Do it my way. This is the method. And I think the crop circle tones work really good because I've taken them to Point Magoo, which is in Malibu near Oxnard. Like I told you about the underground UFO water base that's supposedly there.
Yeah.
And I play those crop circle tones on a Bluetooth, and these two seals came up to the shore and waved at me. And wow. Then a flock of pelicans that usually fly over the water looking for, you know, fish flew right by me. Literally, I'm on the bank looking down. And I'm like 1,000 yards, well, no, about 150 yards to the beach. You know, I'm looking down on a cliff, and that's what I see down there. And the water's clear there, too, and everything. So I know those crop circle tones work really good. I mean, I'm getting them. I use them, and I get them in my backyard. But I don't use his method. I use my own.
That's
and
cool.
I get more I get more response off that. This crop circle tones are a beacon. Like, hey, you have a beacon for a ship that's coming to rocks. Like, get away. The light's flashing. The beacon's like, here I am.
I got a story, though, before we go about the CE5 thing.
Uh-huh.
So I was into Stephen Greer before, and I, you know, I didn't think much of him, but I liked his CE5 idea, and I thought that was cool. I didn't do it exactly like he said, but I never had tried calling out to these beings and asking them to appear. But anyway, me and my spiritual wife Elise were on the beach in New Jersey. No one was on the beach. We were alone in like a private town, private beach, and all of a sudden we called out just through prayer, kind of like asking these beings to come to us with the sense of an open heart and a faith that they could hear our communication. And we were in a high state, so to speak, and all of a sudden we saw these ships that were like glowing, beautiful lights that just look like more real than planes. I mean, you've seen stuff like that. It just flashed and it shot right up in the air at incredible speeds that planes, you know, they move slowly across the sky. Satellites move. This went shooting up. We saw seven of them. She saw them too. And we felt them talking to us, not in words, but in telepathy, letting us know that they do get our communications, that they are here and that they love us. We got a sense of unconditional love from them, and that was inspired by hearing about the CE5 thing.
I mean, and that's just a basic method. I mean, You don't have to, you know, like, I see, like, military aspects in Dr. Greer's method. Because, you know, like, and then he comes from that military background, so it's kind of hard to trust that because of the military complex withholding all this information about UFOs. And then on the other flip side, Tom DeLodge, I think his name is, from Blink 182, the guy from Blink 182. I interviewed those guys.
Oh, yeah, I know that band.
I interviewed those guys in 99, Travis Barker. I interviewed him. And, I mean, he's like doing stuff with the government or something like that. And he was just out on talking about it the other day about how disclosure is going to be coming out really soon. Everything.
They always say, that's what they do, like QAnon thing. I've heard disclosure was supposed to happen in 2011. Then they say 2014. Then they say blah, blah, blah. I'm sick of it.
Exactly.
When it happens, it happens. Who knows when it's going to happen? But the people that say it's going to happen soon and it's all soon, soon, soon. I don't know if I'm really like, yay, it's going to happen soon. Well, if you think you know the future, you're way off.
But like, why worry about that? I mean, you get something that you want, you may not want it. You know what I mean? And there's things like, I want that really bad. And then you get it, and then you regret getting it. Sometimes there's that buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I prefer them being distant to us at this moment. We're not ready for them.
That's what they told me. They said it's all timing. When they make full mass contact, it will be at the exact right time. There are people like me, like you, that have been contacted. Probably millions of people around the world that have already been contacted. But as far as the whole of humanity, cosmic timing is important. In fact, we're at such a bad time in our evolution that they're literally protecting us from destroying ourselves. Like, I'm pretty sure that there's some point where the nuclear button has probably been pushed and they had to stop it. They had to step in and stop it.
I bet you Trump tried a few times and they just, like, you know, didn't give him the right codes.
That
like,
would not shock me. Like,
don't give this guy the codes. Jesus. I worked with short range ballistic missiles in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah,
you know, and then these missiles. I mean, we have a nuclear arsenal in Colorado just alone to knock out the
world
twice
over. You ever see Dr. Strangelove?
Yep, I love that.
Sums up how absurd it is. All that stuff, you know.
Like, don't call him names, and then they're shooting at his own men. he's like, they're coming at us. Look at him. He's like, they're shooting at each other. They don't even know it. This is chaos going on.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't. The radio's out. Oh, we're going to drop the bomb anyways. Hell with it, you know.
But that actually happened in the Cuban Missile Crisis. A Russian sub was cut off from the fleet, and they thought because they sort of were cut off that it all had happened. And two of the people on board wanted just to release the missiles because they thought it had happened. And one Russian guy that was the third guy in command had to approve as per military protocol, and he said, no, we don't want to. It's never going to be good to start a nuclear war, even if it already started. What's the point of all this?
Yeah, it's he already
was,
gone.
Like, they call him the man that saved the world. There was a documentary on National Geographic about this guy or something.
I mean, just us be able to do that, splitting the atom alone, and be able to use these weapons that we shouldn't be using at all. I mean, that's. We have, look at the nuclear arsenal is connected to the gun shooting. The military industrial complex is in connected to all these gun shootings. And how is that? Because we have glorified death. When you look on television, what is the glorification of fighting, shooting, and video games? I mean, you can blame that, but not really. It's the person.
It's part of it. It's definitely, it's just, you got to admit, part of our culture and things like that.
Yeah, but it's been conditioned of the culture.
Look at, like, what happened at the end of World War II, right? America literally dropped the bomb on Japan, who was going to surrender. They wanted an unconditional surrender, but they were retreating. And they did it. Those bombs were meant to hit Russia. The files have been released. Oliver Stone made a documentary about it. It was intended to go to Russia, and it went to Japan to intimidate Russia, is what eventually happened. But they were just going to bomb Russia, who wasn't even attacking us. And Japan was provoked into attacking Pearl Harbor. And FDR, it's pretty conclusive that he knew they were going to attack and did not warn anybody.
The same thing like a 9/11 situation, you know, like knowing it's coming, just kind of have a blind eye to it.
Yeah.
You know, just same thing with what happened in January 6th, knowing it's coming. I'm just going to let it happen. Matter of fact, I'm going to provoke it. It was planned. That whole thing was planned to overthrow our government. You know, they were going to murder everyone, hang them. I mean, I don't know about the news out there, but they're probably going to throw them over the rafters of the Capitol. You know, they were hunting them down. The Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, the Proud Boys, the Aryans, they're all part of the same. You know, like
my question about that is the NSA spies on everybody. So how did they not know ahead of time about that plot?
Because, like, who's running the CIA? He had acting.
Yeah.
And then the Department of Justice, Barr resigned before that happened. So who's really running the show? So Barr probably had a knowledge of what was going on. People in Congress, like these people like Cruz and Hawley and the rest of them, knew what was going to happen. So they just to say they got in and got to everyone. Who would have died and who would have lived? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like runs across your mind what would happen. It's just like shows you how good and love conquers hate. That's what it was a good example, how love destroys hate right there. We it conquered it. Our energy, our the masses of the people that were for the good destroyed that. It was on a thin edge, man. We have to learn.
Were they
from
trying
that.
To provoke a civil war of some sort? If they had succeeded in that, that would cause all the right wing to fight each other.
Yeah. You know, and then Flynn's brother is part of the the Pentagon. You know, Flynn's brother, and he's the one that could have like let the National Guard out. There's all these theories of that. Who knows what's true or what's lies? You know,
the police
like,
had to be involved at some level, right?
Yeah, they had to because they let things happen. Just let it happen.
I wonder, like, if there were any Democrats even on some level involved. I mean, I have all these questions about this that are unanswerable at this point.
It'll probably, some of them will never be answered. And that's where the conspiracies start. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
shit like that.
There's probably going to be all kinds of theories about this. There probably already is.
Yeah, I mean, think of how many books and YouTubers are out there to be putting stuff out. You know what I mean? It's
but
just
all you do. Let one day we got to sit down, me and you. We got to edit the ultimate satire conspiracy movie.
That's awesome.
Music and someone talking that you don't see their face. And we combine all the theories, flat earth, reptiles, all to make it like the ultimate absurd conspiracy that involves everything. That would be hilarious.
It's comical. It's comical. It's like some of these people that say this stuff say it with a straight face. It's like,
yeah,
like,
the earth is flat. Get your head out of the hand, sheeple.
Oh, we're going to spin like a top. Hey. We're going to call it a show here, Baba. All right?
All righty. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. We'll talk again soon. We'll make it a regular here. So, like, okay, Giant Rock Podcast, talk to you soon next week, next time, next minute, whatever the hell happens. We'll love you. Keep hearing now. We love you all. Bye.
Dial instruments versus vertical instruments. Symbols and hieroglyphics. Fluorescent tubes with marks on them. What does it all mean?
nos bailamos con los angélicos. El cielo está abierto. Remembering truth, that love is the only way. Todo es amor. Todo es amor.
She moves like fur.